Hey, everybody, happy Sunday. My speech at a pro-life dinner. Why we can never allow the Republican Party to become a pro-abortion party. Very important. Email us, freedom@charliekirk.com. Subscribe to our podcast. Get involved with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Start a high school or college chapter today at tpusa.com. Become a member today, members.charliekirk.com. That is members.charliekirk.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Noble Gold Investments is the official gold sponsor of the Charlie Kirk Show, a company that specializes in gold IRAs and physical delivery of precious metals. Learn how you could protect your wealth with Noble Gold Investments at NobleGoldInvestments.com. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com. It's where I buy all of my gold. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com.
All right. So, Charlie Kirk, he's here. We've seen him. We've seen him on TV. We've seen him on TikTok. We've seen him out there fighting and having the civil discourse. He's out there doing God's work, and he's the founder and CEO of Turning Point USA, which is the nation's largest and fastest growing youth activist organization, where he's helping to empower our youth, high school students, college students, on the principles of free markets and limited government. But it doesn't just stop at empowering our children. They have Turning Point Action, which is a grassroots activist, which helps elect true conservatives that stand for these principles. He's a New York Times and Amazon best-selling author. He has a nationally syndicated radio show, Charlie Kirk Show, from 12 to 3, and he has over 100 million downloads of his podcast. So please help me introduce Charlie Kirk.
Hello, everybody. What an amazing video that is. This has really been quite a week, and God's timing is perfect in so many ways. And it's fitting that I'm ending my week speaking at an organization that is on the front lines saving babies. Because this week has, if you've been following the news cycle, abortion has been in the news cycle a lot this week, especially for those of us that live in Arizona. And there are some people that believe that we should no longer talk about the abortion issue and stay away from it. And then all of a sudden you see a story like that and you say, well, what other issue matters more than that? Like, what matters more than saving life and saving babies from the potential slaughter of Planned Parenthood? And so I just first want to say this, I speak at a lot of different places, and the people actually on the front lines saving babies' lives, counseling women that are in crisis, that are being abused, are the closest thing to heroes that we have in the country. And so it is such difficult and largely thankless work. And I just want to say thank you. I mean, so many of these individuals they said no to higher paying jobs. They work very long hours. It can be very discouraging because sometimes a woman will come into the clinic and she might choose abortion after a lot of work that's been put in. But it's work that is rooted in obedience. And only a Christian organization would work this hard to save babies that are not their own. I want you to think about that for a second. Do you think a secular organization would be working super hard to try to save life of babies that are not their own? Of course not. And one of the things I want to talk about tonight is the pro-life movement, kind of where we're at, because we're at a crossroads right now, because there are a lot of different people that say, let's stop talking about abortion and let's just try to get away from this issue. And I completely disagree with that, and I'll tell you why in so many different ways. But also the reality that we're living in a post-Christian society. And this is really hard for those of us that are believers, because we remember when America was a Christian society. And I promised myself I wouldn't make this speech overly political because it's honestly, this is so much bigger than politics. But let's just look at Easter Sunday. Easter Sunday, which should have been a proclamation of the resurrection of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, was called Transvisibility Day by the White House. I'm not exaggerating, by the way. They sent out a whole press release saying that it's Transvisibility Day. It's like, I'm sorry, you have the whole month of June for Transvisibility Day. Can we have like one day to celebrate the resurrection? I don't need to convince you guys of this. Church attendance is down. We see the hyper-secularization of the country. There are so many great Christians still, so many of you, so many great churches that are still fighting for righteousness and fighting for what is right. But we are living in this post-Christian society. And we don't really know what is the governing belief of the current, let's just say, orthodoxy of the country. There's all these different sorts of pseudo-religions that have popped up. I have great experience in many of them because I visit college campuses, so you don't have to. And when I visit these campuses, I get kind of a different taste and flavors of all the different fake religions. And let's just be honest, they're not new. They're resurrected from the scriptures of the same pagan beliefs that were all throughout Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua, 1st and 2nd Kings, 1st and 2nd Samuel, where whether it be worship of the earth, whether it be the unclean spirit of Jezebel, or whether it be Moloch, nothing is new under the sun. That's what it says in Ecclesiastes, actually. I always laugh when people say that. I say, do you know where that comes from? Like, the Beatles? I say, no, it's not from the Beatles. Okay, no, it's not from... Okay, no, it's not. Nothing's new under the sun. Thank you, King Solomon. And so, it's totally true. And we're living through this time where this is a spiritual war fundamental. And I'm going to just kind of talk about some hard truths here tonight, and then you can take it however it is, but I don't know how many Christians actually recognize we're in a spiritual war. And when I look at who's actually making a difference for what God cares about, I look at this organization, I put this right at the top of the list. I mean, what could possibly be more important than like starting an emergency line for someone who takes an abortion pill and you want to reverse that? I mean, that is, like, think about that. That you are called to a work like that. And only a Christian society and Christians that understand that you are called to serve the least of these, to love your neighbor as it yourself, as it says in Leviticus 19, would be called to do such a work. And I am terrified at two things. The church not recognizing this, and we'll get to that in a second. But secondly, the hyper-secularization of America, which is the more secular America gets, we are going to lose this sort of spirit, this sort of courage that we're celebrating tonight. And so a couple things that I want to talk about this. Let's look at Canada. Canada is a very secular country. In fact, it's Canada is as secular as like the state of Oregon or Washington is. It is, in fact, by the way, if you people say, oh, you know, when is Marxism coming to the country? It's already here, but that it's invading from the north as well. I mean, Canada is so unrecognizable, and I could do a whole speech on where Canada has become. But let me tell you what happened in Canada, and I'm fearful that we in this country might make the same mistake soon. Just like in America, Canada had abortion that was imposed by them by judicial fiat in 1989. In Canada right now, abortion is legal up to birth, and all abortions are covered at taxpayer expense through Canada's single-payer healthcare system. In fact, Canada is the only country in the world where abortion is free of all legal restrictions. In fact, it's publicly designated as a medical service. In Canada, there are some pro-life people, but the most pro-life people back what's called the Conservative Party. But this means absolutely nothing. The Conservative Party of Canada is not a pro-life party. Its platform suggests legal abortion, and its leaders support legal abortion. None of the major parties are actually pro-life. All the party leaders support abortion on demand. The Canadian pro-life movement became so weak that any legislation with even a whiff of pro-life intent goes down in flames. In Canada, there are no criminal penalties for injuring an unborn child while attacking a pregnant woman, because in Canada, the unborn have rights, no rights whatsoever. And I looked this up beforehand, and I'm going to read this to you. This is from the Conservative Party's website. if the conservative government will not support any legislation to regulate abortion. Now, why do I tell you that? Because they made a political decision in the 1990s that it's too controversial. Some people are suggesting and recommending the same thing right now in this country. I want nothing to do with that. We have to actively reject that to make sure that our pro-life movement expands both in our influence and our cultural impact, and that for those of us that are conservatives, we don't just say it's a policy platform, but we lead with our pro-life positions, that we say that it is a priority in our advocacy. And we have to be honest that the country is not as pro-life as we are. I was like the only person, I think, and well, not only, I think Matt Walsh was too, but a couple other, where Arizona strikes down this old law, this law that says all abortion is illegal except the life of the mother. And I was like, this is awesome. Like, finally, we banned abortion. I could tell by all your silence, you guys might not be that fans of it either. And like, we should be celebrating it. Is that what we want? I guess not, right? Because people are like, well, what do you mean? Like, banning abortion? Like, that kind of sounds, that's the goal, everybody, isn't it? And people are like, I don't know. Like, is that what we want? And again, I'm not picking on you guys, but, you know, it's if I said a different political statement, I could get a standing ovation, right? Like, if I said, for example, Dr. Fauci should be in prison, everyone like, yeah! See? But I said, abortion is banned in Arizona. And we're at a pro-life dinner. Gotcha. Well, you should scream in joy, but, right? But I'm not picking on you guys, but it just proves the point. Like, and I'm just proving the point because people are so uncomfortable because we're so conditioned. Like, are we allowed to celebrate that abortion's illegal? Like, is this a good thing? Is this a bad thing? And it's amazing. But it's not going to last, obviously, because the people of Arizona don't support it, and they're going to reverse it through a ballot referendum. But the point I'm getting at, though, is so illuminating. I was like, I thought we're the pro-life movement. Like, that's the whole thing, right? And some people are like, we're not that pro-life, right? Like, we want, like, pro-life at, like, 28 weeks. I'm like, okay, that's not pro-life, actually. And I was like, we have a lot of work to do. But let's be honest, that the pro-life community, those of you that have been in the trenches, and I know I was, like, teasing you a second ago, but those of you that have been advocating and working and doing this incredible labor for 50 years, you have punched above your weight. You have been outspent. You have been bullied. You've been slandered. Some of you had your clinics firebombed across the country. And 50 years ago, Catholics, evangelical Christians, people who love Jesus, who believe that God commands us to fight for righteousness, 50 years ago, they said, we are not going to give up. Catholics prayed the rosary every single day for the reversal of Roe versus Wade. Evangelical Christians went to work in their capacity on this amazing coalition. And decade after decade, so I first got into politics in 2012. And I was told, and I've been a pro-life warrior my whole life, and I was told that Roe versus Wade will never be repealed. That's what I was told. It's never going to happen. And well, God works in miraculous ways where a formerly pro-abortion, pro-choice man who lived a very colorful life went down a golden escalator, became president, and put three Supreme Court justices on the Supreme Court. And now Roe versus Wade is repealed, and abortion is technically illegal now in Texas, which is awesome. Praise God. And see, now we're getting on it. And you, the movement, did that. And I just want to make sure you understand that that should give you great hope for the next fight ahead. Planned Parenthood was publicly funded with $500 million a year. You have every major billionaire oligarch that funded the pro-abortion cause for years, for decades. And yet the pro-life movement was able to launch a strategy to try to build coalitions in legal, in the courts, to be able to reverse Roe versus Wade. And now we need that next 50-year vision because we are at a crossroads. And a lot of people are wondering, what do we do and how do we do this? How about this? We play offense because we have the greatest story to tell. In fact, look at those five, I think it's five images, right? Those five images behind me. That's the story that we get to tell. Is that there's something spiritual that kicks in for all of us when you see a baby. And for they want to expand the amount of babies that are terminated in the womb. We have to tell that story and play offense and not be afraid of the names that they call us. They're the ones that want to slaughter children in the womb. We're the ones that want to go on a rescue mission to save them from that slaughter. That we are the ones that advocate that every single human being has dignity. But what is the real divide here? And I want to thank every church here that supports this ministry. It is so important. And I encourage you to do even more. The real divide here is that everybody here in this room believes in Genesis 1:26. The other side does not. And it's the simplest question that I ask on a college campus. And yes, this does very well on TikTok, which it drives me crazy. I have to use TikTok. There's Chinese spying on me, all this stuff. But I'm very, very popular there, evidently. And it's very simple. What is a human being? What is a human being? And if you can, I mean, we know the answer to that. A human being is an image bearer. A human being has a soul. The secular materialist on campus, they will contest that a human being is an accident of millions of years of evolution, and we just happened to turn out this way. And like, they make fun of us for believing in stuff that takes too much faith. Like, I don't have enough faith to believe in that kind of rubbish. That the human genome is an accident of evolution. That, I mean, you see that just the process of how life is made, that it's obvious there is a designer behind that. However, it is easy to justify the discarding of human life if you reject Genesis 1:26. So in Genesis 1:26, it says, let us make man in our likeness, in God's image. Now, just as a fun side note, the let us is the first mention of the Trinity in the scriptures. And by the way, if you ever want to have loving fun with a rabbi, ask them to explain Genesis 1:26. It's awesome. They all have different answers. Oh, it's God talking to the angels, God talking to the animals. No. It's God the Father, the Holy Spirit, and Jesus. Let us make man in our image. Anyway, loving fun with our Jewish friends. They all have different answers. They're all known as it's fun. Elohim is the term that is used, I believe, in the original Hebrew. That defines who human beings are. So if you believe that, then all of a sudden 100 things automatically become true. If you believe a human being is an image bearer, you don't have the right to eliminate another image bearer just because they're smaller. Just because they're not as advanced in the level of development as you. Just because their environment is not the same as yours. And just because their degree of dependency is different than yours. Now, I did not come up with this, but I have become very good at explaining it, which is the acronym SLED. It is the easiest way to debunk a pro-abortion person in your life. It is size, level of development, environment, degree of dependency. You write that down, you could debunk any pro-abortion activist in your life, and it's very simple. Where else do we apply on moral terms where your size, level, environment, or degree of dependency is equal to your worth? I'm 6'4", like actually 6'4", not like a fake 6'4". Am I allowed... No, I laugh because some people come up to me, they're like, yeah, I'm 6'5". I'm like, you're not 6'5", actually. You know, I'm actually 6'4", and you're not. You're tall, but you're not that tall. Am I allowed to all of a sudden murder people shorter than me? No. Size means nothing. In God's economy, your height, your size, whether you are 1 pound or 100 pounds or 200 pounds, you are made in the image of God. Therefore, your size is completely irrelevant. Okay, level of development. Does a younger person somehow get less rights than an older person? That's complete rubbish. Okay, environment. Do the people of Cincinnati get different rights than the people of Houston when it comes to human rights? Of course not. Then finally, degree of dependency. If someone is dependent on another, does that give you the ability or the right to abolish them or to slaughter them? No. And by the way, you look at the babies here, they're dependent on their mother for quite a while. I know. We have a 20-month-year-old at home. That's a really fun age. 20-month-old, constantly running around saying no to everything. It's really great. And it's like one of life's greatest gifts. And by the way, I thought I was pro-life before. Now I'm like super pro-life. And I have to check myself and pray for repentance. Like, I have deep disgust for the people in the abortion industry. Like, I'm going to be honest. Like, I think that it's modern Auschwitz what they're doing in this country. And that might sound extreme. But, I mean, you look at a baby and you raise a child. And you're like, there's people for a living that go and eliminate that from happening. Anyway, I'll put that aside. Degree of dependency. So they cannot rationally debate on size, level, development, environment, degree of dependency. And then we add another layer to this, which is you ask the pro-abortion advocate, what species is the being in the womb? And, well, of course it's human. It doesn't go through some sort of species metamorphosis. So doesn't that being deserve human rights? Most importantly, the right to live and the right to life. And sometimes they will say But Charlie, it's not your body. It's not your choice. Sometimes, I have the best answer to this, which I actually found at the March for Life like 4 years ago. There's an 8-year-old kid smiling with a sign, and I took a picture of it. I said, that is the smartest thing I've ever heard. I'm going to make America know this saying. And I've used it, it's been seen by 30 million times, which is, okay, they say it's not your body, it's not your choice. The answer is, but if it's not your DNA, it's not your choice, which is the best possible answer. It's not your DNA. New deoxyribonucleic acid is formed at that moment. So they can't defend it on any sort of moral ground. So then they defend it on convenience grounds. And that goes back to the ultimate schism. What is a human being? And they're able to justify it because they think human beings, at the very worst, they think human beings are like an inconvenience annoyance and we're overpopulated. And make no mistake, depopulation is behind a lot of the abortion agenda in this country, okay? I know that might sound extreme, but there are depopulation advocates, Bill Gates, that have been arguing about this for years, and they're perfectly fine with abortion as a way of population control. Read the original documents from Margaret Sanger and eugenics. They wanted widespread sterilization and population control. But secondly, on top of that, which I think is incredibly important, is the question of who actually is in charge. Everybody here tonight believes two things, whether you're Catholic, evangelical, Episcopalian. If you're Episcopalian here, good for you, because you're one of the few pro-life Episcopalians, I think, still in this country. I'm sorry, I always pick on the Episcopalians. Even Tucker picks on Episcopalians, and he's Episcopalian. Which is, there is a God, and we are not him. There is a God, and we are not him. It sounds so obvious, right? But most of the people that advocate for abortion will say that, well, there is no God, and if there was a God, it would be me. And both of those things, I wrestle with this, and it's an open question on our podcast, which is, what is more damaging to society, believing in that there is no God or believing you are God? And I've come to the conclusion that believing God is actually worse than being an atheist. Like, if you think you're God, I actually think you do more. They're both really bad, obviously. But atheism leads to that belief that you are a God. And that confirms that we are in a theological and a spiritual battle. I love the book of Exodus. In fact, I think the book of Exodus speaks to our times more than any other book of the Bible right now. Properly reading the book of Exodus, Exodus 1, I could do a whole hour of speech on just Exodus 1. I have it almost committed to memory. And in Exodus 1, we must understand how Genesis ended. At the end of Genesis, it was the high times of Egypt. They avoided famine. Things were going great. And Joseph was the counselor to the king. Joseph, by the way, is a perfect image of how I think Christians should interact with our government. Counselor to the king. Same like Esther, Mordecai, Nehemiah, Jeremiah, etc. And one of my favorite verses, and it changes the whole trajectory of the Old Testament. And then rose a king, or Pharaoh, over Egypt, who did not know Joseph. And by the way, you could apply it to today's time. Then rose a generation over America who did not know Abraham Lincoln. Then rose a generation over America who did not know George Washington. Forgetting the sacrifices prior gets you tyranny. So this king rises over Egypt, does not know Joseph. And then he complains, who are these Hebrews that expand into so many numbers? They are so numerous. And he gives an edict for the midwives to the Hebrews. And they very well could have been either Egyptian or Hebrew. No one actually knows. I'm not going to get into that very contested theological debate. However, he says to throw the firstborn into the Nile, which in ancient times is the closest thing to abortion that we can possibly get. And what is remarkable, the context here, the Pharaoh is the closest thing to like God on earth that you could have in ancient times. That he was literally looked at as a demigod. That he was the closest thing in that sort of pagan culture. Secondly, understand Egypt was a death cult. They built their structures. They spent more time building tombs, which are pyramids, than anything else. Everything was focused on death. They said, when you die, that's when the real good stuff begins. So throwing babies into the Nile, no big deal. Because when you don't believe in a monotheistic God, why wouldn't you throw the babies into the Nile? They're just inconveniences. But in one of my favorite stories in the entire scriptures are the first pro-life warriors that we have in the Bible that remind me of the pro-life warriors here. Is the midwives to the Hebrews, they disobeyed Pharaoh because they feared God. And this is why I think that they were Egyptian, because they go back to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh is mad. He's like, why are you not throwing these babies into the Nile? And they say, well, the Hebrew women are so strong. They go through labor so quickly, and like the worst excuse ever, right? And Pharaoh gets mad, and he and otherwise would have just killed them. The reason he didn't kill them, I think, is because they were actually Egyptian, which makes their heroism even greater, my personal opinion. But then I love this verse. God dealt favorably with the midwives and increased their numbers greatly. A direct blessing. God cares so much about the innocent life that was being thrown into the Nile that it was explicitly said in the book of Exodus that that is his will. Everybody, what is going on right now is a very similar story where Planned Parenthood is doing the equivalent of throwing the babies into the Nile. And the question is, will we do what is necessary to try and step up and try to prevent that? Now, understanding then the Jewish people going out of the death cult of Egypt is the story of Exodus. Exodus comes from a Greek two words, exhodos, the way out. And eventually, you know, you guys know the story, but I just want to focus on Exodus 20, which is, I think, so important here, which Moses goes up to Mount Sinai, stays there for a while, and in the 10 statements, which is actually what it is, not the 10 commandments, I am the Lord your God who delivered you from Egypt. Hey, remember, I'm the Lord your God that delivered you from that death cult. You shall have no other God before me. You shall have no other graven images. You guys know the list. And as if you couldn't write it, this goes to show why our advocacy is so important. Moses leaves Aaron at the base of the mountain for like a very short period of time. And where do human beings resort back to? This is a guy that saw the Nile turn to blood, that saw locusts come in, you know, the famines, the 10 different plagues that came across Egypt. This is a guy that saw the parting of the Red Sea. And Moses goes on a little hiatus to go convene with God. And Moses comes down with the tablets, and what is Aaron doing? He's throwing a rave party with a golden calf, being like, I don't know how this happened. And isn't that amazing? This is a guy that saw God's miraculous intervention. And still, he goes back to the default setting of paganism. And then I just love the, it's an amazing verse. Moses says, so what's happening here, Aaron? He's like, yeah, I mean, we threw the gold in the fire and out came a golden calf. You know, yeah. Hate when that happens. It's like one of the funniest verses, honestly, in Exodus. Like, yeah, you know, we're throwing gold in there. No, of course we know what happened. Is that at our core, there is this tension that we must worship something. And it's built into everybody. There are no atheists. There's just people that call themselves atheists. And you worship something. Maybe you worship self, you worship a celebrity, you worship an icon. That is literally why the first commandment is, you shall have no other gods before me. Period. Hard stop. And we must understand that in this movement right now, as we contest for life, as we contest for the ultimate and the beautiful things, it is tempting because the culture wants to go back to worshiping the golden calf and or whatever sort of false and fake idolatrous God as it might be. So I'll close with this. I think I'm doing okay on time. Am I okay? I can go a little bit longer? Okay. So it is time to play offense. And I understand we're outnumbered. We're outgunned. But it is a fight that I think God, I don't want to say cares the most about, but it's certainly a fight that outside of getting people to give their life to Christ, I can't think of a fight as important in America as that. And by the way, they're directly tied together, which is if you get people to know that Jesus is Lord, then you also want to make sure that the innocent are not slaughtered. And the rise and the continuation of the pro-abortion industry is not going to go away. But it is the grittiness, it is the resolve of so many of you that matter. And we do not act because we want to see a specific outcome. We act out of obedience. And those are two completely different things. And that's why I love what this organization is doing, and I love everybody on the front lines, which is I do it not because I, my flesh, wants to do it. I do it because God commanded me to do it. And the sooner we can change that attitude, there's so many things that will fall into line. And so we know that we are in the spiritual war. And I will just say this. I said this in the previous engagement that we were talking. Isn't it something that civilizations that never came in contact with another, that were never close to one another, they all had the practice of child sacrifice? Aztecs, Mayans, Incans, Egyptians, Indus River Valley, the Mesopotamians. It just seems as if there is a spiritual cry from the underworld to always sacrifice the least of these. I'll let a theologian sort that out, but that's something worth thinking about and worth praying about. Jesus in John 10:10 says it perfectly. The enemy has come to lie, steal, cheat, and destroy. But I have come to give life and life more abundantly. And we look at that in spiritual terms. Satan wants to take all of our lives. He is the author of deception. And in the pro-life fight in front of us right now, what do the scriptures tell us about Satan's behavior? From the garden to tempting Jesus in the wilderness. It's never total lies that are told. It's half-truths. In the garden, which again, if you guys, I like finding funny verses because I think it gives some levity. Because some people say, oh, the Bible's not funny. Actually, there's some hilarious, like for example, when the serpent, goes to the woman and Eve and messes everything up. What's the first thing that Adam says when God is confronted? When he's confronted by God, walks in the garden again. It's the woman that you gave me. That's like hilarious. We've never changed. It's just from the garden. It's never taking responsibility. First thing. It's the woman that you made for me that messed all this up. It's really something. But the serpent and in the wilderness, what was Satan doing when Jesus was tempted for 40 days? He was quoting scripture. He wasn't quoting it correctly. He wasn't applying it correctly. And he is the author of deception. Satan literally means prosecutor in Hebrew. And I think there's going to be an author of deception of, you don't have to fight for life that hard. You don't have to contest for the unborn. And I go back to that example of Canada. That there's some people that want to bring us that. Just forget it. Make it a non-issue. And I personally wouldn't be involved in this if we weren't fighting for the ultimate things, for the eternal things. And it's because we love the Lord our God with all our heart, soul, strength, and mind. It's because we love our neighbor as ourselves. It's because we love Jesus as Lord and we want to act obediently and all those different things. And it is going to get tough. It will be gritty. If you want to be popular, don't be pro-life. If you want to be accepted by the world, don't hold these positions. But you're here tonight not because you want to be accepted by the world, but because you honor a God that loves us. And he expects certain actions out of us here. So I just want to thank the incredible group of individuals that make this organization possible. And they did not tell me to do this. They said, Charlie, we're going to do a soft ask. That's fine. I'm going to do a hard ask because I'm actually really fired up about this. You guys should all give very generously to this organization. And It is one thing, and I will say this, I more times than not will advocate for pro-life politics, which is important. But we are hypocrites if we do not also financially support for pro-life charities that are doing that work for the women in need and that need us most. In fact, the easy thing is just filling out a ballot. You know the hard thing is? Showing up at one of these clinics as a volunteer when you might be under-rested, working two jobs, to go in very difficult, high-stakes circumstances. And make no mistake, there is no middle ground on this issue. Elizabeth Warren came out last year and said she wants to shut down every pregnancy crisis center in the country because they're leading women away from abortion. Exactly, Pocahontas, they are leading people away from abortion. I'm sorry, I couldn't help myself. I'll close with this, which is, I know a lot of you are wondering the state of the country, and you say, Charlie, are you optimistic or are you pessimistic about where we're going as a country? I refuse to answer. Because if I said I was optimistic, you'd all go home and do nothing. If I said I was pessimistic, you'd go home and do nothing because you think everything's falling apart. Instead, it's simply on the agency that God has given you to fulfill His will here on earth. I know some of you probably say, but Charlie, I've done everything that's been asked of me. I watched the news channels. I bought the pillow. I've done everything that's been asked of me. MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk, just so we're clear. By the way, someone should go buy a bunch of MyPillows and donate them, that'd be really fun. It's going to require more than that, everybody. We need every single one of you. First, we need the prayers for the pro-life movement, because we are under attack, asymmetrically and spiritually. We need your dollars. I'm just going to be blunt. Part of your tithe and your offering every single year, 10% of the money that you give, and you should be giving 10% to church, part of that should go to pro-life ministries. That's how we do our family. Our family, we break it apart, different pro-life ministries, different ones that are doing great work. And number three, we need your advocacy and we need your voice. We need you to be active on the political front, absolutely. But also on changing hearts and minds. On the next time that you have a dinner and someone makes a really strong opinion about abortion, you're like, oh boy, I don't know if I should. You should absolutely say something. Because who knows, two other people at the table might agree with you. And by silence, they will advance. Out of a small little error, the rot will grow. But we know that we can achieve major moral victories in this country. And I'm inspired by all of you that are pro-life warriors. That you do it because it's the right thing. You don't do it for some big payday. You don't do it for political opportunity. And I think it's the best of this country. I think it's the best that the country has to offer. And I want to not just preserve it. I want to expand it. I want to see more of it. And what a time to be alive, everybody. As it says in Esther, for such a time as this, where the stakes are so high, where we're up against a movement that doesn't believe in anything that I've talked about here. And they now say, shout your abortion. They do all this garbage and this nonsense. And they are going to just continue on that unless we play offense, trust in God, and act boldly and courageously. God bless you guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.